last time we started talking about Bishul Akum, we discussed the basic isser, what the concerns are that drive the prohibition against food cooked by someone who is not Jewish. We talked about the rule itself and how we define cooking, gave some of the discussion about microwaving, pickling, smoking, whatever, and gave the first of the exceptions to the rule of Bishul Akum, and that is a case in which the Jew is the one who causes it to become edible. That was our first exception. We're now up to the second exception, and that is food that is edible raw. Generally speaking, we say that if the food is edible raw, then it's not subject to the Isurim of Bishul Akum. And that's based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which I brought on the sheet, I believe. In Source Chav Beis. Actually, no, Chav Beis is not expected. It's also, it's Avodah Zarah Lamed Ches Amud Beis, but Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. But the statement there is that if it is Nechal Kamosh Shu Chai, if food is edible raw, then it's not subject to Bishul Akum, and simply because of either the point that the non-Jew is not going to invite you to his house for it, because it's really just, you know, food that was edible raw, it's not a special thing, so it's sort of related to Olal Shulchan Malachim as a heter, or alternatively, because the cooking didn't really affect the food, he hasn't done anything to it. It's the same as the raw food, it just happens to be, yes, it was heated up, whatever, but the food was edible already beforehand. Which raises the question of food that could be eaten raw with difficulty, right? But people normally wouldn't eat it, or it's not easy to eat it. Could Daniel look along with you?
It's the same sheet, right?
It's the same sheet, yeah. What we're up to is Chaf Beis, source Chaf Beis. It's the Gemara of Azara Lamaches and Beis, and we're going to see two cases here which are subject to a Machlokas Rishonim in terms of how we explain them. And it's a very important Machlokas Rishonim for this issue. So, the Gemara here in Source Chav Beis says, Dag Maliach, salted fish, Chizki Ashari, Rabbi Yochanan Asar. So Chizki says the salted fish, meaning, well, that's the Machlokas is going to be who salted this fish. But right now we're just saying salted fish, Chizkiya, and Chizkiya is going to permit it. Rabbi Yochanan is going to say Aser. Okay, that's case number one. Case number two, Beitza Tzluya, a roasted egg. So Bar Kapara Shari, Bar Kapara permits it, and Rabbi Yochanan says Aser. And then along comes Rav Dimi from Eretz Yisrael, and he says actually merge the two cases. He says whether you're talking about the egg or you're talking about the fish, Chizkiya and Bar Kapara say Mutter, and Rabbi Yochanan says Aser. Okay, that's the setup for the discussion, and then Rav Chiya Parva, Igla Beresh Galusa, and that's a story in and of itself. Rav Chiya Parva goes to the Resh Galusa, the exilarch's household. Amrulei Beitza Tzlu Yamai. They ask him what's the status of roasted egg, which here we saw as a machlokes. So he says, well, look, it's 2 verses 1. Chizkiya Bar Kapara Sharu. Rav Yochanan says Aser. So Ein Dvar Shalachad Makom Shnayim. 2 outnumber 1. So therefore, it's mutter. And Amar Lahu Rav Zvid, Lo Tatzi Sule. Rav Zvid's famous last words are Lo Tatzi Sule. Don't listen to him. Because Abaye says the halacha follows Rav Yochanan. And the result is, Ashkihu Neguta Dechala V'nach Nafshe. They feed Rav Yochanan, I guess who wasn't aware that this was what he was about to drink, a cup of vinegar, and he dies. It's a shock to his system, and he's dead. Which is interesting, because the Gemara elsewhere talks about a person who made the mistake of swallowing a wasp. And now he is dying as a result, and they say, give him some vinegar and it'll keep him alive. Some discussion about whether that's a homeopathic medicine. How to view exactly what's going on in either of these cases, but the bottom line is they kill him. Which, when you know the stories of the Resh Galusa's household from the Gemara in Gittin, it's less surprising to you, because they were known for this sort of thing. They tried to kill Rav Sheshes, the exilarch himself may have been a wonderful person, but his household attracted all sorts of unsavory characters. And leading, actually, I think it's from Zilberstein, is Chashuke Chemet, to ask here, so why did Rav Zvid think it was a good idea to tell them that they shouldn't be eating this, that it's not kosher? Maybe he should have been smart and not said anything at all. There's no reason to endanger your life to tell them about a Durabanan. That's his own discussion. But the point for us is that we have this machlokas regarding the salted fish and regarding the roasted egg. And the question is, why is this a machlokas at all? We have already said that something is subject to Bishul Akum only if it was heated with fire. So therefore, the fish case is not Bishul Akum. It was salted fish, and you're done. And then on the other hand, if it's a food that's not edible raw, and then the non-Jew cooks it, then it's Aser. So what is the egg discussion here? What is the discussion about the roasted egg? So there are two approaches in the Rishonim. One approach is the approach of Rashi. And Rashi says the fish case is where it was salted by someone who wasn't Jewish to the point of where it became just barely edible, or became edible. And the question is, maybe salting counts for Bishul Akum also. After all, we have principles like Maliach Kiroteach in Kashrus, that when you salt something, it's considered to be as though it's being cooked. So therefore, when you salt this, maybe that introduces Bishul Akum, and that's the Machlokas. You follow? That's Rashi on the fish case.
But we already said earlier that it's only...
Correct.
Heat, not salt.
Right. And Rashi nonetheless gives this explanation here. That's why there are other Rishonim on this. As far as the egg, he offers you a very interesting idea. Rashi offers you the idea that maybe what's wrong with... the reason why this is a question is because the food is inside the shell. The akum never touches the egg. And therefore it might be mutter. Which is a newsflash to me. Does that mean that if I have a barbecue grill and a non-Jew lights the grill and puts the patties on using a spatula or something, then there's no Bishul Akum issue?
That's great.
I mean, that's a really novel approach. So, needless to say, we don't paskin like Rashi on these issues. The Ramban Ravid Ritva offer a different take. They say it's actually one machlokas here. The fish and the egg are both talking about the same question. It's that we're talking about a fish that is inedible unless with great difficulty when it's raw. It's a fish that you could eat raw, but no one would want to. And the egg also. You could eat it raw, but generally speaking, people don't eat raw eggs. So and both cases are talking about where it's prepared by a non-Jew, and the fish is then cooked by a Jew after salting. But the fundamental question is, what's the status of foods that are edible raw, but people really don't eat them? That's the way that Ramban, Rav, and Ritva take the case. So the Rif does a funny thing on this Gemara. Take a look at the... Oh, I didn't bring it to you explicitly, but I brought it in the Ritva in Source Chav Gimel.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Dog Moliach is actually cooked, though. So I talk about how it should be Moliach.
So it is salted, and then eventually it's cooked by a Jew to finish off the cooking process.
No one says Moliach Kiroteach, actually
that's Rashi's case. No, that's Rashi's question. Would I say Moliach Kiroteach, and therefore that's a Bishul Akum problem? That's Rashi's question. So take a look at the Rif quoted at the beginning of the Ritva in Source Chav Gimel. He says, Kasav Harav Alfasi Zal. The Rif only follows Rabbi Yochanan as far as the egg case. In other words, on the egg case, he's going to say Aser. But on the fish, he's going to side with Chizki and Bar Kapara, the Sharu. Why? Because it's two against one. So he splits it. On the fish, he's going one way. On the egg, he's going the other way. So how do I understand that? Why is he splitting the two? So the Ritva goes on to explain it. He says, "V'kasha hadavar sherelafia perish hanachon tamechol b'shnei machlokos." He says, "I don't understand. According to the right explanation of what's going on, by which he means his own approach, right? Ritva, Ramban, Ravid. It's the same fundamental question. Both cases are simply a discussion about food that's not edible raw, or that's barely edible raw, I should say. The imachilah k'moshiel yideyat chakshma achilah olav." So he says, "V'haya nira ki Rabbeinu Alfasi zal mefarish hadadug maliach ki pirish Rashi zal v'harambam." The answer is that Rashi is not alone. Rashi has the Rif, and therefore the Rambam on his side. And the Rif is splitting the difference because he thinks the fish case is one discussion, and the egg case is another discussion. In other words, he's taking Rashi's understanding, and what he's saying is regarding the egg. I'm going to follow Rabbi Yochanan and say, even though the fellow isn't touching it, the egg is still treif. It's still Bishul Akum. But regarding the fish, I'm going to paskin mutter, meaning maliach is not like roteach for Bishul Akum purposes. Salting is not considered like cooking. And the upshot of all of this, then, is that Bishul Akum will not apply to salting. It teaches us nothing about foods that are barely edible raw, according to the Rif. And then the Ritva concludes, "Ve'en perusha nachon." However, we don't agree with the Rif, Rashi, Rambam, with their approach. Rather, the rule follows Rabbi Yochanan on both of those cases, meaning asur if the food is barely edible raw. So what happens when you get to the Shulchan Aruch? So the Shulchan Aruch, interestingly, follows Rashi and the Rif in their read of what's going on here. If you take a look at Source Chav Dalet, And the Shulchan Aruch writes, Dagim Eluchim Gedolim, and the reason he has to say Gedolim is because there's a previous Gemara that dealt with Dagim Eluchim Ketanim. So he's talking specifically about the Gedolim. The difference is that the Dagim Ketanim are edible raw, and people do. The Dagim Gedolim are really not. So Dagim Eluchim Gedolim, Einem Ne'acholim Ela Ayidei Adchak, this salted fish, this large salted fish, can only be eaten with difficulty. Lefichachim Tzalan, meaning even after they're salted. Lefichachim Tzalan Ove Kochavim Asurim, so if a non-Jew roasts them after they've been salted, asurim, they're asur. In other words, in terms of the question of ne'achal hayadei adchak, something that's edible only with difficulty, which is the case that we want to get to, he says, asur, v'yesh matirin, but some permit it. In Yud Gimel, he talks about the smaller fish, dag shemachal ove kochavim, uperosha ashanan achechshirin la'achila, this fish that he salted or fruit that he smoked, harayelu mutarin, that's mutar, he's following the riff and paskining that as far as the question of salting, is salting a problem? He says salting is not a problem because you didn't use fire, just like we said last week. And then in Sif Yudalit, he says, even though egg is edible raw, if the non-Jew cooks it, it's asur. That's just like Sif Yudbeis regarding the fish. So the upshot is that the view of the Shulchan Aruch is, number one, I'm going to say that salting is not cooking. Number two is that the egg that's barely edible raw, or the fish that's barely edible raw, is going to be usur if the non-Jew cooks it. Now, that's the Shulchan Aruch Psak. The Aruch HaShulchan.
He thinks both. He thinks the Ritva and the Ritva.
Well, essentially he's saying the Ritva is right in principle, even if I won't apply him in this Gemara. That's right. So the Aruch HaShulchan here indeed takes the strict view in Source Chafei. Beitza, afal pi shereuya legom achaya, asura bevishul le'akum. Even though you could swallow the egg raw, nonetheless it's bishul akum. And he also mentions dates that are bitter. Tamarim hamarim kitzas, that people only eat al yedei adchak. If the non-Jew cooks it, it is asur. So that's indeed the way that we rule on this case of foods that you could eat raw, but nobody does. So that, now let me add in a few other practical cases. First of all, food that people tend to eat raw, but only with other things mixed in. So let's say you have something that you could eat raw, but you'd have to add sugar to it in order for people to actually eat it. So yeah, you can come up with all sorts of cases, I suppose. But let's say...
Maybe
onions. The Mishnah Berurah is about to bring us ginger as an example of it. But I'm wondering, even just like, I don't know, can people eat raw oatmeal? Like when it's just the rolled oats, if they add sugar to it?
I mean, they do something to make granola bars, but I don't know what it is.
Right, there's a lot of syrup on those.
It just says rolled oats on it. I don't know what any of it
is.
No,
well, it's rolled.
Right. The answer is, I don't remember how you roll anymore. There is a discussion about rolled oats in brachos. But take a look at... Sorry? Well, that would be a real problem. That's part of actually one of the big questions about why anybody thinks that horseradish counts as maror, is if you're making a bari priyadama on your karpas and saying that's going to count for your maror, but you can't make a bari priyadama on eating raw horseradish because that's not normal food. So that's one of many questions as to why anybody thinks that horseradish is maror. But going back to this... there you go. If you go take a look at Source Chavav, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Al Zangvil, Zangvil is ginger, Shemarakhan Oso Kishu Ratu, which, when it's moist, they spice it or sugar it in order to make it into a food, Bar Priyadama, the Shulchan Aruch says. Venira Duhuadin, Imarakhan Oso Yabe, she says the same thing would be true if they did this when it was dry. Kevin Shayadeka, who royal achila, because that makes it suitable for eating. Hazanglo Iker, umvarech alav bar priyadama. So he says it's a bar priyadama because the ginger is the main thing. The Shulchan Aruch is discussing bishalakum. The Shulchan Aruch is discussing what's called food. And he says you make a bar priyadama. And on that, the Mishnah Berurah in Source Chav Zayin says, Hazanglo Iker, vaafilu rakho ovegilulim, even if it's a non Jew who did this sugaring of it, ain bo mishum bishalakum. He says he's dealing there with cooking it, not with sugaring it. He's dealing with cooking it. And he says it's not subject to bishul akum, because you could eat it raw if you mixed in sugar. That's the case over there. So even though the non-Jew cooks it, nonetheless, it's considered edible raw. So all of these items that we just said are considered edible raw, even if you normally eat them raw with something else in them. What about a food that people eat raw, but only if it's fresh? And once it dries, they don't. Think of peas and beans, right? So you can eat peas if they're fresh. Once they're dried, people don't eat them unless they get cooked. So what do you do in such a circumstance? The Aruch HaShulchan tells us in Source Chaf Ches, Vida, you should know, Dimilashon Rabbeinu HaRama, Shekasav Al Afunim V'Kitmios Kluyim. The Rama discusses the cases of peas and beans that have been singed over a fire to make them edible. Tama Heter, the reason why these are not a Bishul Akum problem is because V'Neshein Olin Al Shulchan Malachim. Because you don't have these on a king's table. He didn't say the reason is because they are edible raw. So levadnu mizeh, dechol davar shagam shebe'eshtem itzbashel ochlem osa kishehi chaya. He says, we learn from here that anything which, when it is cooked, people eat it. Anything which people would eat raw, the eisha misbashel is the tricky word. Misbashel there doesn't mean cooked. It means what? Ripe. Anything which, shebe eisha misbashel, when it ripens, the ochlen osak shechaya, people eat it, even though it is raw, kemo afunim v'kitnios, like the case of the peas and beans, people at the end of the summer will eat them out of the garden. The kayadua, he says, as is known for those who have gardens, not if you live in Toronto. Nonetheless, he says, since after they dry, they are not suitable to eat raw, only with difficulty, which we've already said doesn't count as eating. It is not called edible raw. In other words, the upshot of this is that my concern is not the overall food item, but I'm concerned about the food item that I have, whatever it is that's in front of me. So if this is, in fact, a fresh pea or bean that an akum cooked, I'll say nachak moshuchai. That's okay, it was edible when it was raw. But if it was dried and then cooked, then I'm going to say that is not called ne'achal shuk moshukhai. That is not called edible raw. So it depends on the particular item that I have in front of me.
Is that, I guess we'll see later. Does that standard apply to olal shul menachem melachim, that thinking, or it's specific?
So it actually will, yes. It's very food specific. We'll see that. What about I have a dish that contains food that is edible raw and food that's not edible raw? Let's say you have meat with carrots, right? And the non-Jew cooked it. Carrots are edible raw. Meat, we generally assume, is not edible raw. So what do I do here? So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Lamechesem and Aleph discusses this and says, I didn't bother to reproduce it on your sheet, but it's explicit in the Gemara that we go with the ikar. You go with whatever is considered to be the essential food. And so it's very interesting because the Gemara there, in discussing it, talks about the case of breaded fish and said the bread is the ikar, and therefore it's problematic. Even if the fish is the type of fish that you could eat raw, nonetheless, the bread is what matters.
Maybe back then it was like a pastina kind of thing, but it was
very heavily breaded. Yeah, theoretically. I haven't seen much discussion about it, but it's possible. The Shulchan Aruch says, following that view in the Gemara, that it depends on what the ikar is. I brought it for you here on the sheet in Source Chavtes. If you mix together that which is edible raw with that which is not edible raw, ubishlam obe kochavim, and the non-Jew cooks it, ima ikar midavar sheyesh bo mishum bishulei obe kochavim asur, if the essence, whatever the main thing is subject to bishul akum, the food's asur, if you're lav mutar, but otherwise it's going to be fine. What about if it's 50-50? So the Aruch HaShulchan says that it's fine, based on the language in the Shulchan Aruch. The Aruch HaShulchan is in Yerudea Kuf Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet. Last question in this category, what about food that I eat raw but nobody else does? Right, go back to the eggs discussion. So I am trying to work out and get my protein and so on, so I eat raw eggs. So does that now mean that for me, it's not subject to bishul akum? So you already know this rule because it applies in all sorts of areas of halacha, but la daita waitzel kol adam. We care about most people. We don't care about what you do personally. Source Lamed, he says, Dabar Pashut, who? The Aruch HaShulchan writes, it is obvious to Le'i and Dabar Shemunayachah Kmoshu Chai, as far as this category of an item that is not eaten raw, Holchan Acharov B'nei Adam, we work with what most people do. Dima Rov Ein Ochlin Maichel Zek Moshu Chai, if most people will not eat it raw, Asha Yachad Ochlal Mikomakom Asur Gamlo, so Yachad La'ochlal Mavushol, even if he would eat it raw, nonetheless, he may not eat it if it's cooked by an Akum. Vim Arov Ochlin Zek Shuchai, and if most people do eat it raw, then Afsha Yachad Eino Yachol Ochla Rak Mavushol Mikomakom Mutur Bo, the Butla Dayetuetz Lakola, then we will rely on this to be lenient also. If other people eat it raw and he doesn't, it's okay, it's not subject to Bishol Akum for him. And he quotes you the Brichadash to support this. But then he says something interesting, which we're going to have to come back to regarding sushi. Aval, in Medina Achas Ochla Kishi Chaya. What if you have a food that in one land they eat raw, and another land nobody eats raw? So then what? Then you're not mevatel one to the other, meaning you could actually have a rule that a certain food item is bishulakam in one place and not bishulakam in another place. That's the that indeed is going to be the standard. We're going to say the same thing regarding the next heter of bishulakam, the olah shulchan malachim heter. It really depends on local practice.
Yeah. Are you
going to
discuss the sushi question later?
Yes. Yeah. So that was our second of the three heterim of Bishul Akum. The first heter we had discussed last week was the case of the food that the Jew brings to edibility on some level, as we talked about. Second exception was food that's edible raw. And then we get to the third one, and this we don't need to spend a whole lot of time on. But it is the food that's not olal shulchan malachim, that is not prestigious. And this is also the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Lamechesem at Aleph that presents it. And the rationale, as understood by the Rambam, I brought it here on your sheet, is in Source Lamed Aleph. She'ikur ha'gzera mishum chasnus, because the decree was this intermarriage decree, that you're going to go hang out with them and realize that non-Jews are nice people too. The shleizamnu ha'akum esla b'se'uda, you don't want a situation in which the non-Jew invites him over for the meal. V'davar she'eno olal shulchan malachim, le'echol bo esapas, ein adam ezamin eschaveru alav. He says something that doesn't go on a king's table, to eat it with bread as a proper seuda, he says, you don't invite someone over for. I don't invite someone over for a candy bar. Now, the truth of the matter is, you sort of have to wonder about this, bizman hazeh, because like people invite someone over for a cup of coffee. Right? I mean, it's not like the, and we're going to talk about whether coffee is subject to bishul akum, or whether we say it's not olal shulchan malachim. We'll talk about that. But the point is that people are more casual today, probably because food is a lot more easily accessible, and going over to somebody's house is a lot simpler. So whether you could really say this today is a question mark. Nonetheless, we don't change the gzera.
Can you be machmir, though, and define the gzera of olal shulchan malachim instead of a king's table, my table?
So I don't think so, right? Because the language of the Gemara is explicit, and the standard they employ is clear-cut. So I would not think so. Even though I think at this point the reason for it is extremely questionable, I don't think we change that.
So,
yeah.
What about the fact that when you have, if I sit over for a coffee, that's casual, but the shalav of chasus, really when you have a suda with somebody, you're spending a lot of time, and the levity that comes out of a suda, that's what they're worried about. They're not worried about having a coffee with somebody because the atmosphere we have a coffee. When you have a Shabbos meal, you have something that's bigger with the levity, with the satiety of a full meal, that tends to bring to this want of more intermingling than a casual.
It's an interesting argument. I don't see that in the Rambam's wording, yeah. but it's an interesting point. The nature of your dining together will be different. Okay. There are no practical applications, because as I said, we're not changing the rule, but it's an interesting point. So how do I define olal shulchan malachim? How do I define prestigious? So Rabbi Yisrael Belsky classically says, and I brought you the reference to where he is cited in Source Lamed Beis, he says a wedding smorgasbord. The type of food that would go out, you know, at a wedding, that is olal shulchan malachim. That's one standard. The other famous one is the Star K out of Baltimore, who claim that they, I assume they did, I'm not saying claim like in any skeptical way, but they claim that they investigated the status of potato chips as well as canned goods by contacting executive chefs from the White House. And the answer they got in the White House is, on the one hand, they told them, we'll serve whatever the guest requests. On the other hand, we've never served anything out of a can. That simply doesn't happen here. So
even in the White House, meaning what kind of food is it? Meaning I feel like there's a prophet of some sort. No. About like meaning is it any dinner or is it a state dinner?
Right. So the answer is a state dinner, but I get the sense that like any dinner was a state dinner. I don't know.
Well, then nowadays at weddings, I like the beginning. I might walk around with French fries and.
Exactly.
Or anything.
No, that raises a really interesting question, which is, does that change? Does that now become Olah Shulchan Malachim? However, I think it's important to keep in mind the, I think that's wrong. Never mind. Yes, that is true. That can change. So, among the things that comes up with this is the question of food that is eaten at prestigious meals in a different culture, but not in your own. Right, the same way we asked the question before about different cultures when we were talking about what you will eat raw, the question comes up here, and here I brought you two sources just because I couldn't not bring them. It's a debate about potatoes. And the Chachmas Adam gives you one approach, and the Aruch HaShulchan gives you a different approach. The Chachmas Adam, right? The Chachmas Adam is the same as the Chayit Adam of Danziger. He says, venerally, the Peri Shakorin aired apple, O bulbus, which are names for potato, Ola HaShulchan Malachim. He says, these are called things that go on a king's table. Klalo shel davar, the rule is, hakol halech acharam mako, mashaderech le'achol ba'osna makom l'rov, v'nei adam k'shukhai, o'sheinu ola shochem malachim muter. He says, the rule is, in that place, whatever people eat when it's raw, or whatever does not go on a king's table, is going to be muter. That's the principle. But then in Lamed Dalet, you get the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan says, tapuchei adama, shekorin kartoffels, o bulbus. Nira, and he's writing in Poland, as opposed to Hungary. Nira Lafinius Daiti, Dzem Mikri Eino Ola Shulchan Malachim. He says, it appears to me that that's not considered to be a food for a king's table. Vim Bishal Ha'akum Osam Rak B'mayim Bilvado, Afa Osam, and if the non-Jew just boiled them in water, or he baked them, Mutter Li Yisrael Ochlam, a Jew may eat them. Diyadua Shehi Achila Pshuta V'rak Dalas Ha'am Ochlin Osa Lamarbe. He says, this is a food that's a simple food that only the paupers eat in any real numbers because they're too poor to afford anything better. Granted that wealthy people will also eat them occasionally. That's because they're so common. So they make it into people's diet. But it's not that it's an important food. The fact that a wealthy person eats it doesn't mean that it is wealthy people's food. That's the distinction he wants to make. And he says, it's certainly not going on a king's table, a little lapis as a pas, a little parparis, not as a dessert, not on a sandwich. And then he goes on to discuss this issue, and he says, if you jump to after where he quotes the Chochmas Adam, maybe in earlier times, the gap between the Chochmas Adam and the Aruch HaShulchan, I think, is about 50 years. If I remember correctly. He says, maybe in earlier times, it wasn't as common. And he says, then it was important. He says, remember, potatoes are an import from across the ocean. So he says, it's been about 100 years since it made it here. But now, he says, we plant it and it's all over the place and so on. It's a very interesting bit of halachic discussion here, the interplay of the history of a food's evolution.
Where did it come from? New world food?
It's a new world food, potatoes. They come from Idaho. Yes, there's a new world.
Not all they ate in Europe?
So apparently not, oddly enough. I'm just looking now. I want to take a fast look and see if I'm correct about the years on the Chochmas Adam, but I'm pretty sure I am. The Chochmas Adam is earlier. I had him later. He passed away in 1820. So he's writing this 100 years before. Yeah. Okay.
So it was after
you said, or after? No, he's definitely before, but it's not 50 years before, it's 100 years before. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So Spain what's the... Prague. If you just say the klal, you're saying the klal is this...
So the klal that emerges from this is that we define Shulchan Malachim based on your culture and your time. What about a food that's eaten at prestigious meals, but only in a different form? So let's say we take Adam's point regarding French fries and say nowadays they take the French fries around at the shmorg, so maybe French fries are now considered to be Olah Shulchan Malachim. I would still disagree because Rove eating of French fries is still not.
That matters?
Yeah, we use rove as far as edibility also, if most people will eat it raw or not. So why would I also say most eating of French fries, generally speaking, occurs with hot dogs, which we still haven't come back to in terms of hot dog status. But the but generally speaking, most eating of French fries occurs at a ball game or in that kind of a scenario, not at a wedding smorgasbord. Just the opposite. I think the fact that people take them at the wedding smorgasbord is because it's an unusual thing to see there.
Right.
I think that's why people take them. Otherwise, they wouldn't look at them twice. But the question is, what about where food is available in multiple forms? Let's pretend that the French fries were considered fancy, okay? But potato chips aren't considered fancy. So now what?
Something cooler. Just because they're mostly eaten at ball games, but they're also zocher to be in the Shulchan Malachim, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Aruch HaShulchan is really saying about potato. He says wealthy people may eat them, but they're not wealthy food.
But then he also said it wasn't eaten on Shulchan Malachim. No, he said they eat it, but then he says it's not...
Yeah, because they're not going to put it up. That's true. He does say that also.
Every wedding in Israel has to be a break because it's the first course. That's a clear question.
Right. So let's take... So the question is, what do you do? So the answer is, and it's brought in that same source that I brought you in Lamed Beis, that I'm blanking now on the name of it, but you see the web link there. They argue, and I believe they're quoting Rebelsky, that it's only Bishul Akum when it's in the prestigious form.
Right.
So in other words, in Lamed Beis, I give you a web link.
Yeah.
So in that article, they say that it's only when it's in the prestigious form, which makes sense in terms of everything that we've discussed. It's very food specific. So potato chips are not going to be subject to Bishul Akum, even though potato burek is maybe. That's the idea. Okay. Which brings me to the last part of this, which is we wanted to talk about some specific foods.
Sorry, the specific form, I mean, like pasta. So pasta is one form, but is Wacky Mac and fancy pasta the same thing?
So
is that the same form or different forms?
So, and we're going to have to talk about pasta anyway. That's actually the last of the items that I wanted to get to. So maybe hold that for when we get to that. First of all, you need to be careful to identify when you're dealing with any food where the concern is Bishul Akum and where the concern is Pas Akum. Right? Why does that matter?
For Sephardim, it matters a lot more.
Well, for Sephardim, it matters because of, as we said last time, the intervention needed by a Jew in order for it to be considered a Jew's cooking versus a non-Jew's cooking, or a Jew's baking versus a non-Jew's baking. That's number one. Because for Bishul Akum, the non-Jew is going to have to actually, according to the Sephardim, handle the food. Heating it isn't sufficient, or adding to the fire, I should say, is not sufficient. That's number one.
These kulas don't apply.
But number two, these kulas don't apply. Exactly. Pas Akum doesn't have the Olal Shulchan Malachim Heter, and vice versa. The heterim of Pas Akum don't apply to Bishul Akum. So when you have for Pas Akum, you say you can get it from a commercial bakery if there's no other bread around. That doesn't apply when you're talking about Bishul Akum. Right? For reasons that go back to the beginning of the last year, these are very different gzeros. So you need to know, am I dealing with Bishul Akum or am I dealing with Pas Akum? It comes up in Tosfos in Avodah Zarah Lamed Ches and Tosfos in Chulin Samach Dalet, where they discuss the case of rolls that were kneaded with eggs. And one Tosfos, says Rabbeinu Tam, calls it Pas Akum, and the other Tosfos has Rabbeinu Tam calling it Bishul Akum. So some say one of the Tosfos is supposed to be Rabbeinu Hananel and not Rabbeinu Tam. But the resolution of that is interesting, but the point is you need to know whether you're talking about Pas Akum or Bishul Akum, that matters. So what's the status of oatmeal? Oatmeal could be, which you make just by pouring hot water on it, so you could prohibit it, or not prohibit it, but say that you need a Jew to be the one to add the water, because it is not pre-cooked. It is not edible raw. That's the assumption that we make, is that it's not edible raw. And even though, when you add water to it, it's not al ha'esh, right? That's not al ha'esh. The oatmeal is sitting in a bowl. It's not being heated on a fire. Nonetheless, the OU and the COR both argue that iwei kli rishon, pouring from a vessel that was on the fire, is considered al ha'esh. So it will be subject to the laws of Bishul Akum. So therefore, one might say that you need to make sure that your oatmeal has the water added by a Jew. The response to that is, Eretz Chemda and Eretz Yisrael notes, that oatmeal is not Olal Shulchan Malachim. We generally assume that oatmeal is not considered Olal Shulchan Malachim. It's not a fancy food, and therefore it's okay. But the principle that I'm mentioning this for is this principle that iwi kli rishon, pouring from a kettle, counts for bishul akum purposes, and that will matter in other cases. Like, for example, couscous. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask what case would.
Right, so couscous would be a case where it would. Couscous would be considered all shulchan malacha. Okay. What about rice? So you have to distinguish between two kinds of rice. Parboiled or converted rice on the one hand, and instant rice on the other hand. Parboiled or converted rice is not cooked at the plant. It is partially cooked, but it's not fully cooked. It's not edible. The end product, therefore, requires bishul yisrael, because it's not yet edible. And that's a position taken by the Starkei and the CRC, both of whom I gave you in source Lamed Hay when I gave you those web links to look at. They say that therefore, practical issue, you have young children and you've made the mistake of having a nanny in your kitchen. So if she pours the water on the rice or puts the rice in the water, now you have a bishul akum problem. However, instant rice is already edible when it leaves the factory. You could just soak it in cold water and it would do the same thing. We actually had this happen. Through a very long story, we had a phone that ended up in water. And they tell you that a phone ends up in water, what do? You put it in a bag of rice. And the rice will absorb the moisture from the phone, and depending on the degree of damage that's been done, your phone actually may still work. But in any case, that's not the point. The point is this phone was put in the water, and in the rice, and nobody thereafter wanted to eat the rice, right? So the rice itself is dry. It's just a bag of rice that a phone set, and the rice isn't. So what do? We threw it outside for the birds. Let the birds eat the rice. Let them get poisoned from the phone. No, let the birds eat the rice. So it then rained, and the rice all loaded up and just looked just like rice you'd have on your table. No different whatsoever. Instant rice is not getting really cooked, even though we heat it because we like it. It tastes better when it's hot. But you could soak it in cold water, and it'll blow up just the same, and it'll be just like any other rice. The bottom line, therefore, is that instant rice will require bishul yisrael at the factory, because that's where they're making it edible. But on your end, it could be heated by someone who isn't Jewish, and it won't be a bishul akum problem.
But you have to get extra instant rice. For regular rice, you don't necessarily have to get extra.
So based on this, leaving aside any questions about factory equipment or additives or anything else, but based on this alone, that is correct. Instant rice would require hechsher to make sure you have bishul yisrael at the factory. Parboiled converted would not, just based on this sole factor. Correct.
That was like the hot dog question.
Yes. Coffee. So the Pisrei Tshuva in Yerodeya Kuf Yud Dalet Aleph believes that coffee is a bishul akum problem. However, everybody else disagrees. The Pri Chadash in Yerodeya Kuf Yud Gimel Zayin, the Aruch HaShulchan Yerodeya Kuf Yud Gimel Chav Beis, Rav Avadya and Yechaveh Das, Dalet Mem Beis, they all say that we just view this as water. We view coffee as water. It's not bishul akum, and they leave it at that. Note that that may have ramifications for coffee and other halachas, right? The issue of coffee before davening is one. Potentially the other is using coffee as chamar medina. Let's say for Havdalah, if you consider it to be just water, it may no longer be eligible as chamar medina.
You also don't have to say it's like water in all the areas of the
lake. Sorry, that's the question. Correct. And that's why I'm saying just it's something to consider. Because I agree with that point.
It's considered bishul for Shabbos, though.
Well, it's definitely considered bishul as far as Shabbos is concerned, but bishul of water is considered bishul also for Shabbos. So that's not surprising.
The issue of coffee being
you're asking that question. Right, that question I'm not touching on. The question of bishul and coffee grounds and being roasted before and bishul is a whole other discussion. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Sushi. So, according to the Aruch HaShulchan that we saw just before, that said that each country, you know, will do it its own way, so once eating fish raw becomes a normal activity, as it is in certain societies, so you won't have a bishul akum problem. The CRC discusses this, I gave you the link here, and says that in North America, it's not considered to be something that is eaten raw normally yet, because it's not that popular yet here, where you'd say that everybody is doing it, and because it's not all fish that qualifies. In other words, the point isn't really sushi. The point is to now be able to say that all fish is now exempt from bishulako. And realistically, in the not all fish can be used for sushi, only the freshest of fish.
What about the, what right, are the ones that can?
Similar to the peas and corn we talked about, maybe. That was only, meaning when it was fresh, then you would eat it. No, there was, if it wasn't dried out, then you wouldn't.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you could say the same thing for sushi. People so, make sushi
so
fresh.
Sushi-grade fish may not be subject to bishul akum. That's
right.
An interesting argument.
You want to take that?
Yeah, no, I hear
why,
that.
Why is it? It has to be a good grade.
You can't take frozen. I don't think you can take frozen salmon they buy in the store and make sushi out of it.
Because it's not healthy, or wouldn't it be good?
Yeah,
I would say it's not healthy. I don't do that.
So that's the. That's their point on that, and the question is
that
so how do you right? The question is how do you evaluate it?
How long was this written?
It's relatively recent.
So she's like the coolest thing in the world now. So
yeah, but even still, I mean, I don't. Part of the problem also is when we say one land versus another land. I'm guessing now, and this is a total stereotype, but I'm guessing that sushi is going to be eaten one way in Boston and another way in Kansas.
Right.
So I'm not really clear on how that plays into it. Where do you draw your boundary of here it is eaten raw and here it's not eaten raw? So I don't know. So that's the problem, but that's the position that the CRC has taken. I quote them specifically because they went on the record. Most of the Vadim don't. Note that in terms of sushi itself, you have a separate problem. Even though you'll say, well, the fish is raw, so therefore, what bishul akum are you concerned about? Rice. What else is in your sushi?
Rice.
So therefore, you have to watch out. Is the rice instant rice? I would bet it's not. Just because we do tend to use it for shulchan malachim type of situations, that's what you need to know. Is this instant rice or is it the parboiled rice? If it's the parboiled rice, if it's instant rice, then it needed bishul yisrael at the plant. If it's parboiled rice, then it needs bishul yisrael on this end.
I think people are less concerned with actually getting a kula from sushi, more using sushi as
a kula
for fish.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Okay, next last item. Seitan, which is wheat gluten that's used as imitation meat in vegetarian foods. So the OU has a piece on this that I believe I included here it's the third link in Lamed Hei. The position taken there, I'm just looking to see. I brought an Aruch HaShulchan here. Why did I bring this Aruch HaShulchan? I'm not sure what I was doing that for. All right, I mean, it's a beer question. You know why? This was his coffee. This was his coffee discussion. That's right. That's why. He's dealing there with beer as a way of discussing coffee. He says, "V'dad yeshli b'din zeh she'ela gedola." Right? Korabuzenu kasvu delachin ein b'sheicher mishum bishulei akum. Right? He says they say beer isn't subject to bishul akum. Why? Because just like moda tavua b'teila mayim le'inyan bracha, just like as far as the bracha, you don't make a mizonos. So too for bishul akum. It's not subject to bishul akum. It's not called a grain product. It's called a water product. So he says, he says it's very visible in it. You could see barley, he says, in your water. I don't know what kind of beer he's drinking that the barley is still in it. I don't know if he means the color or they actually had barley sitting in it. This is Novardok beer. So it could totally be that they still have the barley in it. But his point is, he's challenging the view that says that for coffee, you should say there's bishul akum. He says if there's no bishul akum on beer, and you can see the barley in it, there's no bishul akum on coffee. That's his statement. I don't think he means the color, because then the coffee has the color also. I think he means they actually had beer, and they had barley in their beer. Okay. In any case, going back to this vegetarian stuff, this imitation meat. So the OU quotes Rebelsky to say that imitation foods are not olal shulchan malachim, even if the kids are vegetarian. It doesn't make a difference. Nonetheless, imitation foods are considered to be of a lower caliber than the original that they are imitating.
Oh, that's good.
And therefore, they're not a lasha chamalachim.
I like this. I like veggie meat stuff.
Yeah.
Like veggie ground meat. I had this, Shiloh. This
what's the issue?
No, the issue is that it can be cooked. In other words, if someone cooks me this imitation stuff, this seitan, is it subject to bishlachim?
Well, is it eaten raw? What kind of
it's meat? It's weakling. I don't think you eat meat raw.
So we're not talking about the package baked salami.
No. Okay, no. So the other side.
In the
you're right. That would go back to our hot.
Yeah.
Paris, though, I mean, tofu is considered chashuv. They make everything with tofu.
Well, making everything with it doesn't make it chashuv. Right? It's only if it's something that's reserved for Shulchan Malach. The fact that it's more popular. Right. But the fact that it is popular means that if you're eating it just at your random, dinner table with the kid, it's not Shulchan. Right. So the last one is pasta, or as Adam said, pasta. It drives me nuts. So number one, normal pasta. Normal pasta is not cooked at the plant. They make it, they form it, and then they dry it. So, therefore, you need Bishul Yisrael at your end for the pasta. Pre-cooked pasta is cooked at the plant, and it's just rehydrated on your end. So you'll need Bishul Yisrael at the plant because of the cooking. Instant noodles are cooked at the plant, but are not considered olal shulchan malachim. Instant noodles are not anything fancy. Now, frankly, I'm confused as to why normal pasta should be considered olal shulchan malachim.
Yeah.
I mean, I made pasta for my kids Tuesday night. Like, it wasn't like big. No one sat down to the table and said, "Oh wow, this is a great meal." So I'm not so clear on why this is an olal shulchan malachim issue.
That's my question.
But I think that's exactly the question. I think that will I say that there are different pastas, and there are some that are fancy, and there are some that are not.
Question from the beginning: is wacky mac different? I mean, wacky mac is 100% out of all the shulchan malachim, but does that matter?
Right.
So
I want to look into this. I want to look into this pasta one because I'm not satisfied with what I've got here. I also want to look into further reference on the hot dog question. So Blina, I will do that and follow up.
But it's not like the hot dog. It's the same that you're saying as these noodles, which you only have to rehydrate.
If you only need to rehydrate it.
What's the hot dog question? Yeah, they're cooked already.
Right. If you only need to rehydrate it and there's no heat required, then I'm going to put it in the rice category and say that it's now that it needed cooking originally. It doesn't need cooking. Right. It needed Bishul Yisrael originally. It doesn't need Bishul Yisrael now.
So could we assume any time by the hefsher that
it would... So the hefsher take care of that?
So I would believe that any time you say that Bishul Yisrael was needed at the plant, the hashgachas are doing it.
Right. That's right.
They're not going to sell you a hot dog that's kosher meat, but it's Bishul Yisrael.
Correct.
That was their question.
No, that is true. Yeah.
Did you look into all that question from last week about the machlokas?
Which one was the
star K O U and what their svara was?
On what? I don't remember the issue anymore.
Oh, for how hot it had to be.
Star K O U.
The O U.
We wanted to know if the O U is to follow the shach.
Yeah.
The O U said it had to stay at 176 degrees at all times in order to be considered.
Yeah. What makorosik or star K O U is this
exactly
about?
Just said as long as it's going
to get. No, I have to look at that also.
176 is
No, it's unclear. That's what we're trying to figure out.
I need to look at that. Okay. Excellent. The next shiur will not be next Friday. But God willing, will be after Yom Tov, whenever that first date is. It won't be the Friday immediately after Pesach. It'll be the Friday after that. That's when we'll resume. And I took a look at some of the topics that that you had suggested. I'm trying to figure out still which one I'm going to go with. I'm tempted to go with the big one.